Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're delighted to be joined by Ippolito Cattaneo, CEO of Ajax Resources. Welcome to the podcast. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Likewise, great to be here.
Absolutely. So Ajax Resources has agreed to acquire 100% of the Pereira Velha gold project in Brazil from Appian Capital Advisory, the $5 billion mining private equity group, which will become a major shareholder through a $400,000 equity subscription as part of an up to £1 million fundraise already largely covered by investor commitments. Pereira Velha carries an Appian in-house estimate of around 110,000 ounces of shallow oxide-free gold mineralization. Only 10% of the ground has been drilled and is suited to low-cost open-pit heap leach development. Ajax will pay $600,000 up front in cash and shares, with a further $1.5 million in shares triggered by delivering a 350,000 ounce JORC resource plus a conditional 2.5% NSR. With strong access, multiple drill-ready targets and the district's proven potential, Appian sold its nearby Serrota mine for $420 million. Ajax plans a two-phase drill program of geochem, geophysics and roughly 3,000 metres of core drilling to deliver a maiden JORC resource. So with Appian's in-house estimate, 110,000 ounces, what specific technical steps does Ajax believe will unlock the targeted 350,000 JORC resource needed to trigger the milestone payment?
So it's a deposit which I've visited recently. We've been there and spent some time. So it's as you mentioned, a near-surface oxide project. And the idea is to arrive to a open-pit production situation. So what we'll do is we will continue. The first step, as you highlighted, will be to review some of the historical work that's been done. There's roughly about $5 million worth of work here that we're inheriting and is part of the acquisition. And then once we've done that, phase one will be followed by phase two, which is the drilling. And that will look to, as you mentioned, only 10% of this project has really been explored. So if you can do the maths and work out what that in-house estimate equates to, which is, as you mentioned, 110,000 ounces, which is not, it's in-house, so it's not JORC compliant. So the goal is to expand that number, to increase it substantially by exploring the 90% of the project that hasn't been explored. And the 350 is a milestone. It's what, when we structured this deal, it was an achievable, realistic milestone that Appian, being one of the largest mining focused hedge funds in the world with a very significant degree of technical know-how, agreed with us was achievable in the near term. And that's why we've put that in. And of course, in the current gold environment, 350,000 ounces, which perhaps in previous days may have not been something to be, extremely enthusiastic about in this market, it is something which is truly extraordinary. So we, for a company with a 5 million valuation such as Ajax, so that is the goal. And of course, that's only the first milestone, because we'll look to go far beyond that if we can. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess the next one is, a lot of investors are always looking for timelines, so I'm not going to push you too far on it, but how quickly do you think that Pereira Velha could be converted into a low-cost heap leach operation, and what early metallurgical work supports that development pathway?
Well, I think in terms of timeline, I think 3 years is probably a realistic 2 to 3 years is a realistic target. Of course, you need to also contextualize the kind of the mining regime, which is a favorable one. Brazil is a very much of a good mining jurisdiction, but there are certain formalities that we need to go through and obtain a mining license, so which is a very straightforward and linear process in Brazil. But that needs to be done. So I would say, without wishing to overpromise and underdeliver, I think 3 years is a sensible milestone in terms of a time frame to deliver that first production.
And then obviously having Appian on board or becoming a major shareholder through this equity subscription, and obviously their history of major value creation at Serrota, how does Ajax plan to leverage that? Presumably they'll help with technical and regional expertise to accelerate permitting, drilling, efficiency and potential financing for any future development stages.
Yeah, I mean, we're absolutely delighted with this deal. It's not the project, obviously, is a good project. It's a project that comes from Appian, so that is in itself of great value. And they've developed it themselves. So you know, a cynical person might say, well, it's an asset they didn't want to develop, and they kind of sold it. And quite the contrary, they've developed it. They've put quite a bit of money into it. But it's, you know, this is a 5 billion plus hedge fund. So, you know, there are inevitably good projects that fall below their, you know, they're too early stage, or they fall below their scale threshold. So this is one of them. And this is, we believe, potentially the first of many deals we'll do of Appian, because Appian comes across a great number of projects, good projects, which, you know, they explained to me, you know, sometimes we don't have the you know, the scale. It falls below the scale parameters, and we can't do many good deals that we see. So hopefully, of course, we need to get this right. We need to show that this decision they made to have faith and confidence in Ajax has been the right one. And then, of course, we're confident in the future there'll be similar opportunities that we can transact with Appian.
Very good. Welcome, Mipo. Nice to be introduced to you. Tell me, a situation is that you have many projects now in South America. Just tell us why South America.
So South America, so we started, as you know, we acquired our first project in May of this year from Bezant Resources, which I think some of your listeners know well. That was a project which Bezant had paid between cash and equity about $8 million for back in 2010. So we did a very good deal in buying that project for $170,000 15 years later. And Bezant unfortunately never developed the project, because we believe, and I think they also believed and continue to believe, that it is a good project. But they, and you'll notice a remarkable similarity between the RNSs we're putting out on Eureka and what Bezant put out in 2010 post-acquisition. You know, what Eureka needs is a drill program. It's a project that has a 400-year history of production but has never been drilled. So we're not reinventing the wheel. We're drilling a project which has non-JORC compliant estimates of having up to 62 million tons of copper at 1%. So that's 620,000 tons of copper, which would roughly be, you know, $6 billion worth of copper and 52,000 ounces of gold, which again would previously be negligible, but in the current environment is, you know, just around $200 million worth of gold. So why South America, to answer your question? Well, I knew Argentina previously. I used to work in oil and gas. I speak Spanish fluently. I think Argentina, since the Milei government, you know, Argentina was, at the start of the 20th century, is one of the richest countries in the world. It's endowed with an extraordinary degree of wealth in terms of natural resources, and also it's a very large underpopulated country. So there are a series of factors. You know, this specific opportunity, Eureka, you know, Bezant selling it for a, you know, Bezant wasn't actively marketing this project. It was something that we, through mutual connections with Bezant, we kind of picked up and were directed to, and then we transacted. And then, so quite an opportunistic acquisition. And then Argentina, sort of a macro factor of me liking, you know, the company liking Argentina very much. So I like Argentina. Then Chile, we expanded to Chile on in late August. We announced the conditional acquisition of Pehuantá. Again, Chile, the one of, if not the leading mining jurisdiction in the world. So that's why we like South America. Africa, we, you know, hard not to go to Africa if you're a natural resources company, but we spent some time as a shell looking at African opportunities, but we didn't find the opportunity that we liked most, that sort of fit, that sort of suited our acquisition criteria. And so we went to South America, and we see good stable jurisdictions which don't, you know, routinely have coup d'états or other bizarre happenings. And so we felt comfortable with our decision.
Yeah, and if you speak Spanish, obviously a big advantage in terms of that. The market seemed to have missed your announcement on this Leon, or Leo the Lion, as I'm going to call it, so people remember its name. Leon, I mean, copper 6.6 million tons at 0.62, and silver 6.6 million at 21.8 grams per ton. So we're talking about 40,000 tons of copper, 4.6 million ounces of silver, and it's just flashed up on my screen. Silver has hit another all-time high at $62.2 dollars per ounce. So this project's worth, you know, three quarters of a billion basically in ground resource, and you're talking about 6 billion in Eureka. The question I would ask also is about Paguanta.
Yeah.
That hasn't closed yet. All of the others are owned 100%, but that one hasn't closed yet at 75%. And then the one you've got today as well. I mean, you're building quite a stable of resources.
Yeah, so all these, circling back to what our strategy is. Our strategy is to opportunistically acquire formerly producing assets, because our focus as a business is not to be an exploration company per se. We want to be a producer and a developer. So we focus on past producing assets which have a significant degree of historical expenditure. So what the common denominator in all these projects that we're acquiring is exactly that. So if you look at Paguanta, that's got a 35 million historical spend, with about 67,000 meters of drilling. That was owned previously by an AIM listed company called Herencia Resources, which put a lot of that 35 million into the ground. Leon, similar, Alexander Mining, for those who have long memories, when AIM was far more liquid than it is today, you know, that this was a kind of a golden period for the AIM market, and it was very easy for these companies to raise money. And there's a lot of appetite for these mining projects. And so Alexander Mining, I think, raised about, you know, in excess of £20 million, and they put a lot of that into Leon. The Leon project. And so again, here we're benefiting from a lot of historical investment, and they both, Paguanta, Leon, they both have MREs, right? Draw compliant MREs. So that really is, you know, we're a lot of the good work has already been done. You know, we're a 5 million market cap company, so we wouldn't have that kind of the capability to do that kind of work. So we're opportunistically buying assets on for what I would consider very advantageous terms, and having the benefit of all that historical work, and we're targeting, as you mentioned, copper, gold, silver, zinc, you know, metals that have you know, are currently at record highs. So so that's, and of course the goal is to have a dual kind of binary profile in terms of doing the exploration, because these assets all have significant unexploited potential, but then also being able to get them into production in the near term. So the deal today as well, the Pre Revelo, it's not a past producer. I think it's the only exception to our in the portfolio. It's the only non-past producer. Eureka, of course, as well, is doesn't have a dual compliant MRE. That's what we're going to do in between now and June of next year. But it was for 400 years as a past producer. Pereira Vale doesn't have that. It has a historical expenditure of 5 million, as I mentioned previously. But it's in an area, it's near a mine, which is 20 kilometers away, which I visited just last month, which is the Serrote mine, which is sometimes known as MVV, because the company that owns it is called MVV. And that was an exceptional deal that Appian did. They acquired it for 30 million and then 10, you know, within a three years, I think, or just I think maybe 4 years, they then sold it for 420 million earlier this year in April. So I think we're building a good portfolio. And of course, these deals are now being, Paguanta is subject to DD. And we're looking to complete all of them.
Very good. What are you going to use this money for? Obviously, you're raising £1 million. $400,000 of that is obviously from the company that you're taking the asset from. They're going to take a position in it, which is, you know, as you said, a 50 billion or a £5 billion company. How much money are you going to have after all of this, and where's it all going to go?
So we've got, as our half-year report stated, we've got a cash position of approximately £1.5 million, market cap of 5 million. We're fully funded for Eureka, so we're not raising money for Eureka. We're raising money because, well, Appian are putting $400K USD into our company, so that it seemed like a good opportunity to raise additional money. The board's putting 60K. Significant shareholders have also indicated their support. So, you know, the money is to basically consolidate our working capital position, to have a bit more cash to pursue some of the, you know, the opportunities we're looking at. That there are some other deals we're also looking at, but also we may do more work at Eureka, and we also want to have funding to take some of these opportunities forward. If we, you know, for example, in Pereira Velo, there's some work that needs to be done as soon as possible in terms of, you know, the current gold environment. And we don't want to be waiting around, so we want to start moving the project forward as soon as possible. So it seemed like a good time. We saw market demand, a good time to reinforce our cash position and be a very well funded small natural resource investment company.
Yeah, and the market seems to have understood that Leon's going to cost you a lot of money. Do you want to explain right now what it's going to cost you?
Yeah, so that was a very unfortunate misunderstanding, because that is not the case. So Lyon is will cost us absolutely nothing for 3 years, because we're paying 100,000 upon signing the option in shares, and that's the cost for the option, and that will be calculated using a 10-day VWAP, and then 36 months from the approval of the EIA. So it's more than 3 years, because the EIA will take between 4 to 6 months to prepare. We will then have the option to buy the project for $3 million in cash. But then, even then, we could only pay 1 million and get an extension of 12 months and pay the 2 million balance in a year's time. So we've got the time frame is actually up to 4 years. And of course, as you mentioned, the value of the resource is in excess of 500 million. So, and that's the resource now. Obviously, in these 3 years, we're going to be drilling and expanding and improving those numbers, increasing the tonnage. So I think $3 million cash in 4 years' time, in 3 to 4 years' time, will be pretty inconsequential. If you consider the numbers that we hope to achieve, and also the production that we will be hopefully be commencing at that point. So it quite the contrary, we're not going to be raising money to pay for Leon. We've got only a $1 million minimum expenditure. So of course, there's no denying we need funding to do the work. And so some of the funding, of course, we'll need to raise money to do that. But of course, with the Eureka drilling news next year and a lot of the value catalysts we have from our diversified portfolio, we will look to raise at the highest valuation possible and minimize dilution, which we as a board, which we didn't talk about, but the board has roughly 35% of the company. So we have no desire to be diluted as we go ahead. I mean, we want to be as careful as possible to ensure that when these assets come online and the value is realized, we as a board can benefit as much as we can from all the work we've done.
Yeah, Leon has the potential there to be sort of 40 million tons at 0.8, I think that was said in the RNS, which would be, a substantial amount of resource in terms of in-ground copper. And just to come back to you in terms of the shares, it seems to be that 70 to 75% of the shares are held by, high net worth individuals who are obviously not looking just for a few percent. Have you got any comments on that?
So I'm the largest shareholder of currently 23%. I'm putting money in the fundraise, so looking to obviously ensure that I my dilution is minimized, and other directors are as well. So we as a board wish to retain our position, and then the rest, the balance of the it's a very nice share register, because the balance is held by high net worth or ultra high net worth individuals that we know, and some of whom we met on the way, who kind of saw Ajax when it was still a shell, listed on the main market, and but shared the strategy, which was always that of acquiring near-term producing assets on advantageous terms. We're very happy with that, with where we are with the share register. Having Appian now on the share register is really a huge kind of endorsement. We feel very privileged to have been considered by them, and that they're wishing that, you've seen the comment in the RNS. They share our strategy. They like the way that we've created this pre-opportunistic and very exciting portfolio, and they believe that we are the right people to take Pereira Velo forward. So you'll see from the share register we have today, you'll see that there'll be some additions, chiefly Appian, but there's also existing shareholders who are adding quite substantially in this fundraise that we've announced. So all in all, I'm happy, and there's very few shares in issue, relatively speaking. We only have 76, prior to the fundraise, we only have 76 million shares in issue. So that means that there's not a deluge of shares out there in the market, flooding the market and preventing the kind of share price appreciation that we want.
Yeah, well, Appian believing in the story, that helps a lot. The names on your shareholder register, most people in this space will know, if not personally, they'll know who they are. But we've gone into quite a lot of detail for people, a lot of people listening to this podcast won't know Ajax and won't know the story. So if we take a step back for a couple of minutes and say, right, Ippolito, you're the CEO, you're the largest shareholder, what's the elevator pitch? if you've got a couple of minutes, say, there's hundreds of junior resource stocks out there. There's quite a few on Aquis. There's, dozens on AIM. Why would someone invest in Ajax Resources over anybody else?
Yeah, sure. So why invest in Ajax? We're a 5 million market cap natural resource investment company with a portfolio of four projects that we've signed binding terms for, which we're currently doing DD on before completing. So they're binding on the seller, but not on Ajax. So if we find something we don't like, we can always opt out, but we've done a bit of preventive DD, so we know that they're good projects. We have a very compact shareholder register, so the board has in excess of 30% of the share capital of the business. The rest of the TR1 holders are, high net worth or ultra high net worth individuals, or small institutions, or even as we have today, a very large institution in Appian. In fact, I think we're probably one of the only London listed, UK listed companies that has Appian as a shareholder. So we're very fortunate in that, and we're exposed. We have projects which all have, or will shortly have, quantifiable JORC compliant resource estimates. So, and these are not, unfashionable metals. They're the most trending metals that you can have at the moment, which are gold, copper, silver, and, well, to a lesser degree, zinc, which is a metal I like very much, but it doesn't have the excitement of gold and copper. And so we're potentially a near-term producer, and we have a focus on developing assets, but also engaging in exploration. So you have the excitement of the exploration, and then the revenue, the numbers, the stability offered by revenue generation. So, yeah, I think Ajax is quite unique. I think you'll find that, as a board, we didn't have any remuneration until we completed our first deal in May. I struggled to find any other company that had directors who didn't take any remuneration for 3 years. And we also are the largest shareholders in the business, which again, I think is quite rare. And of course, there are other companies where the directors have large positions, but not really that common. Most
It's
directors
skin in the
are,
game, isn't it?
yeah, most directors are employees or kind of consultants who tend to have a rather mercenary approach of, moving from one company to another after a set period of time. Not the case here. We want to get Ajax to, 50 million, 100 million market cap, and then beyond, hopefully. So it's interesting. Appian as a fund, it's an extraordinary fund because, in working with them, I've been able to study their history and understand how, how they became what they are today. And, they were telling me, only a few years ago, they were a much smaller fund. And if you go on their website, there's some very nice documentary they've put together of how Appian became what it is today. And it's extraordinary how obviously now they're a multi 5 billion plus hedge fund, but these things can move quickly if you do the right things and you surround yourself with the right people and you're motivated. So I'm not saying we're gonna get to 5 billion. I think that's quite presumptuous, but
A tad, why
why
not
not
try it?
why not try? Exactly. So that's, I think, to conclude my over 5 minute elevator pitch. I think what shareholders have in Ajax is a company which is extremely driven, and I think the number of acquisitions we've announced in the last few months and the terms we've secured is evidence of that.
What would you say? There's a very good elevator pitch, but then obviously the next follow-up question is, what would you say? Is there a flagship in this company? Or if there's not a flagship, is there a project that you're particularly excited about?
Well, I think Eureka is would be the deal of the century if we get it right, because for $170,000 after what Bezant paid in 2010, and bear in mind copper and gold has only increased since 2010, we're able to define an exciting MRE on that, and then we're only drilling a small part of the project. So and we've doubled the size of Eureka since buying it back in May. We've acquired a number of promising contiguous licenses. So if we get that right, that in itself is would be, a masterstroke of deal making. So we're that would be very exciting, and there's pretty minimal downside, because $170,000 is, we have no doubt that we would be able to, even in the very worst case scenario, we would recover our investment. So that would be a project that, and it's our first acquisition, so we're quite, I guess, attached to that project. But again, I sometimes am asked, would you sell Eureka if it, if a large company came and you realize the potential, and then a large company came and offered to buy it? And the answer is, of course we would. We're not, I think the most dangerous thing a management team can do is to fall in love with projects and continue raising money and believing in those projects. And perhaps, sometimes you have companies that the results are not quite what they want, and they continue to drill, continue to spend money. I think you need to have a kind of more generalist approach and focus on what works and what doesn't work. So And when things do work, you need to know when to sell them, because being a producer has a whole host of challenges.
Indeed,
which exploration companies don't have. So we're building a portfolio for that reason. And if we can sell projects on very advantageous terms, just as we bought them on very advantageous terms, then of course we will.
Yeah, well, it's the first kind of mover advantage, right? Like, obviously, the dream is for all junior explorers, you buy an asset, you spend a bit of money, you develop it, you get to the point where you have a definitive feasibility study, grab a load of debt and equity and build a mine. The reality is, most companies that try that fail. The ones that succeed are wildly successful. But actually being able to pivot and say, right, we've done some work on this asset, it's now something in a saleable position where we can make a decent amount of profit and move on from it, is something that you should be able to do. And yeah, I commend you for having that mindset, because not everybody does. And I've seen where that leads elsewhere. Can we tell me a little bit about your own, your own background, what you've been doing the past sort of decade or so? I don't know you, and I'd like to know.
Yeah, sure. So I used to work in a company called Zenith Energy, which some people like and others don't. But it's been up and down. But it's got a very exciting story. It was a company which, until July of this year, had a $100 million valuation, so about £80 million market cap. They've got an arbitration. They got three arbitrations against Tunisia. So I was part of the team that actually during COVID acquired all those licenses. Again, similar kind of strategy, acquiring from big companies, oil and gas licenses, producing licenses, phenomenal amounts. And then, the Ukraine war happened, oil price shot up, and those assets which were acquired for very nominal but commercial terms, because that was the value of those assets at the time during COVID when oil prices were extremely low. That then worked very well, and Zenith has a $570 million claim. So, that is my background is oil and gas, but it's always been not so much from a technical side, but more on a entrepreneurial side, being able to identify good projects, deal making, doing good deals that can then create shareholder value. So I spent quite a bit of time there. Obviously, my father, there's no disguising it, my father runs Zenith Energy. So that was it wasn't what I wanted to do in terms of, wasn't ever the plan to work with my father, but then a series of circumstances meant that we ended up working together, and I was very happy. I learned a lot, but the idea was always to set up my own company. And so that's why in 2021, I set up Ajax, and I came together with Mike Hutchinson, who I knew previously. And I said to him, look, I really like mining. I feel I've worked in oil and gas, but I think mining is really the next big thing. And it's actually easier in some ways technically than oil and gas. It's still challenging, but relatively less difficult. Why don't we sell?
You might eat those words in the future.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, but when you're drilling wells at 5,000 meters in oil and gas, you kind of then an open pit deposit seems rather easy, but relatively easy. And so then in 2022, we listed Ajax. And so that's been my focus ever since. But there is, always a connection to Zenith, because the uranium licenses that they announced earlier this year, they were licenses that I found, and I actually wanted to put them in Ajax. But we don't have any past history of producing or operating in Italy, being a Shell, being a new company. So very sadly for Ajax, but very happily for Zenith, they are now Zenith. So that's an extraordinary mining opportunity, and I think if we go ahead with that, there'll be perhaps some synergies or areas of cooperation that Zenith and Ajax can explore, because those are two fully built uranium mines which never went online, which have defined a defined in-house resource, which the goal again there would be to publish a dual compliant MRE or an equivalent in Canada, so 43-101 national instrument. So the mining natural resources background is there, and before that I worked in banking briefly, and so it's always been an entrepreneurial story, and I believe in what I do, and I didn't want to be an employee in a large organization. I wanted to kind of build my own path, and so that's why I chose the high risk kind of career path of being a natural resources entrepreneur, which can be It can go very well. It can also not go very well. But
you're preaching to the choir here. Trust me. Tried the being an employee on decent money and very low risk, and it was incredibly boring for a couple of years. Didn't last very long. Last question from me. In terms of, I don't know how the best way to describe it, I guess corporate structure. You're acquiring assets. You're doing work on them. Some of them you may take to production. Others you might sell off earlier. How would you describe the business model? Was it like a merchant banking model? Is the idea to spin off these assets off into IPOs? Or do you want to retain them all within the parent company and develop them all simultaneously? Because I feel like once you get past sort of four or five assets, it becomes difficult for one company to develop them all at the same time operationally. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, no, I think a risk of and we're fully conscious of it is overexpansion. So we're not now, I think we diversified geographically, we diversified in terms of profile of assets because we've got the exploration excitement of Pereira Velho, we've got the gold there, we've got the exposure to Chile, which is a great jurisdiction, we've got Argentina, we've now got two flagship projects in Argentina. So I think in terms of expansion, I think now what investors want is to deliver, right? So that's the drilling now, and Eureka is the focus. But then, in the current environment, there's so much capital going around, and there's so many projects which were previously perhaps not really being pursued in the way that is the case now. So there's a great number of good projects out there. So that's why we wanted to diversify and enrich the portfolio, but we're very conscious of the fact that we're small, and so we can't. I'm not going to buy projects and then just do nothing with them and just keep them on the in the company. Just cynically, some companies have previously bought projects and then promote them and then never do anything with them just to raise money. That's not the goal. We want to develop all the projects. We're buying a project that we fundamentally believe bring value to the company. And so no, I don't think the IPO route is what we'll follow. I think we'll just develop. We want to be a production company, so we will get as many of these projects to production. And then again, as I mentioned previously, if Eureka comes in as an extraordinary result and it's proven to be
A Eureka result,
Eureka
potentially.
result, then there's a larger specialized producer that comes in and wants to buy it from us for a very significant amount, then no, there's no kind of rule that we would follow where we would kind of just be enamored with the project and not sell it.
You're
So
dating them, the assets, you're not marrying them.
yeah, exactly. I mean, we want to do what is best for the company and shareholders. So if it means we can then pursue other projects, then use that funding organically, then why not? Of course, debt will be another instrument we'll use specifically, doing agreements with forward selling some of our future production, being able to finance our activities in that manner so that we don't have to issue shares in future. But I think at this embryonic phase of our business, unfortunately, it's inevitable that we'll have to issue some shares and there'll be a small degree of dilution.
Sorry, I did say that was my last question. I've just got one more. In terms of exploration news over the next sort of, let's say, 6 to 12 months, obviously there's probably going to be a lot of surface work and geophysics and important stuff that goes initially. But drilling assays, when do you reckon, because that's the stuff that moves the market, gets people excited, when do you reckon that might get cracking on these assets?
So drilling there, Eureka is going to start very, very soon. Obviously, we've got Christmas now, which is great and wonderful, but also is unfortunate because people don't work as efficiently during the Christmas period because they have their
It's
money
not happening
elsewhere.
till January, really, is it?
So
North
we'll update the
America.
market on that, but there might be some rationale in terms of the teams there today. I've just been speaking to them for a few hours. So the teams at site, all the equipment's being mobilized. So we there's no delay. But it might be more strategic to start in first week of January. But at the same time, we're evaluating that point. So there's no delay. I don't want to be criticized for missing deadlines. We've got everything sorted. We simply want to do what is best and most financially reasonable for the business because there's no point having equipment stationary over Christmas when we can do everything much more efficiently in the first week of January. So that is a consideration we're kind of mulling over. But yeah, the drilling result, the drill results will be there'll be three drill holes in definitely in January that will be drilled, and we'll have preliminary results that we can show the market, which will give some initial degree of feedback regarding Eureka, which first ever drilling to be conducted in the 400-year history of the project, so that's very significant. And then of course the MRE will be published by June 2026, so we're fully on track for that. And we've got a very good relationship, and that may be about wishing to say too much. That might be a future news item, but we've got a very good technical partner in Argentina who owns a drilling company. So the idea is, of course, to have the best possible drilling at the lowest price. And Eureka has never been drilled, so it needs a lot of drilling in order to define the resource. Again, we're fully funded for all the drilling we plan to do between now and June to get the MRE. So that will be, to answer your question, that will be there's going to be operational news. So it's not just acquisitions, it's also buying projects and then swiftly getting on the ground and developing them.
Perfect. Thank you.
So, Ipo, you want to become a producer, and ultimately, I presume you want to become a bigger company than Zenith Energy.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Zenith's got a 570 million claim. So if that comes in, who knows where the market cap will be. It'll definitely be in excess of where it was in July or June, which was 80 million. But But yeah, look, why not? We're two different stories. There's no link in the business. The only link between the two businesses is that my dad runs Zenith and I run Ajax, but that there's very different shareholder registers. And Andrea actually has a nominal investment in Ajax. So there's no link. But I think in terms of the valuation, yeah, I mean, obviously there's no point. You get some CEOs who say all sorts of nonsense on these podcasts, not on your podcast, but on other rival podcasts. They say, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I'm not going to say that. But the reality is that we want to get to 50 million. That's our first milestone. I think 30 would be a good milestone because that's the minimum market cap to be listed on the main market, which is the market we've just come off as a shell. So that I think is our first milestone, get to 30 million, which is perfectly achievable if we deliver and then scale up from there. I mean, a company I like very much, which I had the fortune of meeting the CEO and some of the other people behind it, is Amaroq Minerals in Greenland. And they've got a similar strategy.
Don't talk to Charles about that. It's one of his favourites.
Oh, really? The early year.
I'm a big fan of Amaroq. I like Amaroq.
To their geologist team earlier today. Sorry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not going to plug.
But... No, I'm a big fan of theirs. So that what they've done with that their Greenland. In fact, I was looking at that mine that they acquired, the Black Angel mine. As great project there, but unfortunately it was too small back in the day to bid for that one. But it was what they've done is being a producer, right, and being a gold producer in a tier one jurisdiction and buying assets that formerly produced and bringing them back to life. So not too dissimilar from in fact exactly the same as our strategy. So they've got, I think, a 400 million three just I think they may have a bit less perhaps 300-400 million valuation, and they've done Eldar, the CEO, he's done an exceptional job, and he's taken that company from having a 10 million market valuation to where it is today. So he's a bit older than me, slightly older than me, but maybe 5 or 6 years, quite young. So why not? He's a smart guy, and he's got a great technical team and a great team around him. But the idea will be to try and, as much as we can, to try and replicate what Amaroq did in a different jurisdiction, albeit.
Yeah, I compare you very much actually to a different company, which is Guardian Metal Resources with Oliver Friesen. I think you're young, you're very insistent on proving that you can make this happen, and we wish you luck along the way, but we will do a more in-depth in the projects at another time, but today was all about reviewing the situation. You literally have billions of dollars of resource in the ground. All you got to do is prove them up to the point where you can produce them, and I think you'll be fine with your 30 million, 50 million, etc. And if one of them literally does have a eureka moment, then you'd be worth hundreds of millions.
Yeah, well, that's the goal. That's what we're working towards every day. So thank you for your kind words, and hopefully we'll be able to start delivering that in the new year.
Okay. On that note, we'll say Ippolito Kitanio, CEO of Ajax Resources. Thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.